Evening, everyone. The Joint Subcommittee on Revenue is open. We're going to continue tonight exploring different kinds of business tax changes, looking at commercial activity tax, value-added tax, and for the first time, we're going to look at perhaps a hybrid of those two, sort of a meeting of those two worlds. And we're looking at them through some tax incidence modeling that we do through the Oregon Tax Incidence Model, or OTEM. And so Chris Alanak is here to walk us through the first ones. Let's start with the CAT tax and tell us the rates and what you found for us. All of this is on the OLIS channel.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So the first item is an OTEM output that's probably looking familiar to the committee. So this one is a CAT with some exemptions. It is a tax rate of 0.29%, and it exempts petroleum and payers of the medical provider taxes. So those are the exemptions. And then it also reduces the personal income tax rates from the current rates of 5%, 7%, 9%, and 9.9%, down to 4.5%, 6.5%, 8.75%, and then the 9.9% stays the same. So the starting point is actually kind of in the middle of the page. The static revenue impact for this is about $655 million. That's both policies combined, and that's a one-year impact. And just to refresh the committee's memory, this version of the model, basically, we so-called shock the system with the change in the tax structure and the model, and that change throws all of the equations out of equilibrium, and then the model solves, so we're back at an economic equilibrium, and that's the five-year time period. So some of the key metrics that we look at here up in that top box, and this is in 2020 levels, we have the in the private sector there, the personal income is actually up about $138 million. And I should probably say all of these percentage changes, that's about a 0.06% change. All of these are fairly small. We are talking about a $200 billion economy and $655 million of a tax change. So it's a relatively small proportion. And this is what we tend to see is very small changes on plus or minus on either side.
Well, so if I could read into that, Chris, that you can do this adjustment with the tax increase and the revenue personal income tax cut and really have a very nominal effect on people.
Right, and yes, and those are the puts and takes, if you will. We have a tax increase of the commercial activities tax and then a tax cut on the PIT side, personal income tax side, and the value of the model is to try and understand how those two interact. And here we can see that the employment effect here is actually positive. It's up about 0.14% or about 3,700 jobs. And that is just the difference in the job level under the different tax scenarios and after a five-year time period. And there's not much change to investment or the return to capital. But we do see the wage index declining, and this is a pretty common one that we find in the model when we have a tax cut. Then employers are inclined to pay people. They can hire a little bit more because they don't have to pay as much because the net take-home pay for the taxpayers is what people respond to. And the income tax goes down a little bit, so we see the supply of labor increasing a little bit, as well as on the demand side, that they'll hire a little bit more because they can pay a little bit less. And then we do see a change in the price levels of 0.23%. From the commercial activities tax. And then the main other part of the output is at the bottom of the page where we have this distributional impact. And OTEM is broken down to about 9 households. There we have the lowest income group is basically those under about $20,000 of income. And then the top income group are those people with over $200,000 of income, roughly speaking. And here we see not much of a change, and there are actually a couple of income groups, 3 of the 4 bottom income groups actually experience a slight increase in their real disposable household income. The percent differences there are all either 0 or minus 1 or 0.1. So that's showing that in net, the there's kind of a trade-off between the two. And the change in the number of households, we have a slight decline in the number of households at the top end, at the high end, and in the lower groups, we actually have positive gains in the number of households.
Feel free, committee, to weigh in here with comments or commentary. I'll start. This is, I think, pretty clean commercial activity tax. The only exemptions are those that are absolutely necessary. The gas tax or petroleum exemption would not help with this school fund because by constitutionally that money would have to be dedicated to roads. And the medical providers are the taxpayers who pay into the provider tax. And because of that arrangement, they were promised they wouldn't be double taxed with this as well. So, but aside from that, there are no exemptions here. The argument for no exemptions is that it helps keep the tax rates low. It's more of the Ohio model, which I think theirs is 0.28. And so I have to show some bias toward that style. Because for one thing, look at there is money raised, but if you look at the disposable household income, it's just about as close to zero as you can possibly get. Senator Benz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a baseline? The 0.29 applies to what? $500,000 to $100,000? What's the baseline?
The parameters are the tax that it applies to Oregon sales over $1 million. So this is the, and I apologize for not including it. This is kind of the base assumption we've been having that those under $150,000 of Oregon sales are fully exempt. They don't even need to file. And then up to from $150,000 to $1 million, there's a flat fee of $250. And then the rate kicks in for sales above $1 million. So there's $1 million exemption for everybody above that level of Oregon sales.
And what percentage of businesses are under $1 million in sales?
Yeah, in total, we're talking about 400 to 425,000 businesses, and the vast majority of them, maybe 300,000 or below.
Okay. So this takes out all of the really small businesses, the carpet cleaners, the consultants.
Most of the sole proprietors, just about all of the sole proprietors.
Senator Benz didn't mean to jump in.
The country lawyers.
I'm sorry?
The country lawyers.
Right. And again, you mentioned why petroleum was left out, but can you explain again why petroleum's out?
The goal of this tax package is to raise money for education. And any money raised from petroleum use is basically anything that would have to go into the highway fund can't be used for education due to the constitutional restrictions.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. What do we see on here, the regressive nature of this, if at all? How do we show, can you show us where that incidence is? When we have a, as I did when I went back home over the weekend, older people coming up saying, "Hey, I'm on a fixed income. Don't raise my taxes." Where on this chart does that appear?
So a lot of those folks will be in that bottom group, the less than 20,000, and that is still negative. They're not offset. A lot of the other folks are offset by the personal income tax cut. They are paying some level of personal income taxes, so they're benefiting from that. But that bottom group just doesn't tend to pay much in personal income tax. So that group isn't affected by those cuts.
Is that because some of them don't even file?
Some of them may not file because we do include, this is all taxes. So you can have retired folks with property tax is a big piece of that. When we've looked at the distribution across the households, under the current system for all taxes, the property tax is a piece that's stuck in that group.
And follow, Mr. Chair, up under private sector where it says price levels, the 0.23, is that the increase that they would see at Walmart when they go shopping? Is that what that is?
Yes, that's the overall expected increase in prices that we would expect to see with this combination of packages. Just a point, it's normalized to a baseline of 100, and then just to reflect, rather than trying to incorporate all of the prices, it's kind of an average price, if you will, for everything in the economy. And the overall average increase would be 0.23%.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Enterprise.
It's often said that the corporations are going to pass these taxes on first to the customer and then second to labor. Is that why we see the wage index taking a hit?
That could be a piece of it. What we tend to see with the wage reduction there is that with the reduction in personal income taxes, the supply of labor, people respond to their net tax, their net disposable income. And so with a reduction in tax, that's basically a pay raise for them. But businesses can pay a little bit less because of that tax reduction. So it's the combination of those two effects.
Rep. Nathanson?
No. Not yet.
Rep. Smith?
What a flashback that was, Senator Hess, Representative Hess. Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple things. So my first question is, was the goal of this particular run of the OTIM to try to come up with a number that was the least regressive and had kind of the lowest impact on the economy? Because the biggest thing that I notice is this is not the revenue number that I am hoping for. This is a much lower revenue number than I'm hoping for. So I'm just curious as to what the selection method was for coming up with this particular model.
There was, you know, if you think that we had like NCAA Final Four brackets, we did not. Oh. We just kind of took a rip. So what would a clean, let's just start with no exemptions. Mm-hmm. Took an Ohio-esque kind of rate and said, how does this look? How does it affect the economy? I realize $1 billion a target, but this is just what this looks like when you have no exemptions and at that rate.
Okay.
Rep. Nathanson.
I'll add just one short comment. This is an exercise, an additional exercise to illustrate how this would work, what the impacts would be. There is continuing discussion on details for us to bring to this subcommittee.
Okay.
And the idea is to float these out in public, and you say, okay, we want to raise more. Okay, let's raise rates. And you say, okay, let's go to point whatever. And then you say, oh, but look what that does to employment, or look what that does to the $30,000 a year category. And then you add in something else or take something else. And so that's kind of the exercise we're in.
Thank you.
All right.
The next one. Okay. So the second one here, we continue to wrestle with modeling the VAT here. And one of the change is here in going through some of the proposals that are out there around the value-added tax is largely exempting, allowing full expensing for all capital investment, for all capital purchases, and a subtraction of all capital expenditures. So this is also kind of an exercise to see what OTIM had to say on this. And it's largely modeled on a tax on labor, given all of the subtractions from gross receipts on the capital side. So that's where the labeling of the exempt capital. And the tax rate here is around, I think, forgot to include it on the title. I think it's around 0.9. But then this one also has the change in the tax rates as we had before. And I still label this preliminary. We aren't including banks and insurance companies here. Still trying to figure out how to get that to work within OTIM and try to understand some of the output from OTIM regarding the value-added tax. So this is, I don't know if it counts as an academic exercise, but it's that kind of process where if we have this, we'll see what we can model in OTIM and then study the output.
So for all intents and purposes, banks and insurance are exempt from this model.
right? We still have an issue or trying to figure out how to model the tax on those. The insurance companies, a lot of their value added is the spreading of risk. And so it's not clear how we would model the tax on that. And even finance banks, there's some element of risk containment there. And I've been trying to think about how to explain this. And one possible way to think about it is the difference between implicit and explicit transactions. So for banks, you can sign up for a free checking account or free savings account, and there's a value to that, but there's no dollar amount exchanged in that. And the banks will do that to collect, to get people to save money in their bank, so then they can take those that capital and invest it or create loans, and they will use that capital. But every time, so I go to a bank and I open up a checking and a savings account and I deposit my money in my account, the bank can then use that money to issue loans for other customers. So in a sense, they're using my money for those transactions, but those are implicit transactions. There isn't any sort of fee or paperwork on those transactions. And but that's a lot of the value that's embedded in that in those transactions.
So you would have a so you can't deduct their it just wouldn't apply to them because of the cost of goods sold or whatever the category is called, costs of the companies can't be calculated.
Right. So we're it really comes down to that question of what is it that we're applying a tax rate to. And some of the plans that included these financials and insurance companies weren't included in the VAT. They would have been subject to, they would have remained subject to the corporate income tax. And so we're still struggling with exactly how that would work out. And then those challenges are parlaying into how we model it in OTIM. But the model that we have here now, the changes are again fairly small. And this one raises about $1 billion, $989 million for the static impact. We do have a positive impact on employment, driven again by the personal income tax cuts. We see the wage rate, or the wage index falling again, and the price levels increasing. And they're roughly the same as the other plan. The price levels are. The wage index takes a bigger hit here, but that's going to be because the model is focused on the labor side of these businesses.
So when you say the labor, you're basically saying is once a company subtracts the cost to other companies, payments to other companies, then what's left is the labor that they don't deduct, and that's why that's being taxed.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, going through all of those subtractions for all of the capital expenses that are subtracted, then what's left in terms of being taxed will be the profits and the labor costs. And so that was another experiment here with OTIM, is if we focus all of that tax on those two pieces, what does the output look like? And that this is what we have before you right now. And then the bottom part of the graph, the disposable household income by category, by income level, is roughly the same as an earlier version. The reduction here, and don't have an equivalent CAT, but the reduction here in household income is less than $1 billion CAT. That's another area where we're trying to understand exactly what that is. We would have expected that to be a little more similar, but this suggests that more of the tax is being exported than we think should be, given that the intent here is a value-added base at the national level and then getting shared down to Oregon via a single sales factor.
Can you explain that a little more, getting shared down, the apportionment of how this is?
So the way the tax works, so if you remember the discussions from 2017 around a value-added base, many countries in the world use a value-added tax, but it's a national tax. And in 2017, the discussions were problems with having a subnational VAT. Well, the proponents here have argued that kind of, they basically solve that problem in that you calculate value added at the national level. So for every company that would be subject to the tax in Oregon, we calculate their value added in the U.S., and then Oregon gets to tax a slice of that value added based on the single sales factor. It's similar to the corporate income tax, where our starting point is federal taxable income. It's their taxable income in the U.S., and we tax just the single, the percentage of that income represented by the Oregon sales divided by U.S. sales. That's the,
and how is that slice computed?
Here, just again, basic on the receipts. So you have receipts in the U.S. So you have the value-added base calculation, and then you have U.S. sales and Oregon sales, and it's that same percentage.
So you take the sales of the two, and it's just that percentage?
Right. So if you have a value-added of $10 million at the U.S. level, and your Oregon sales represent 1% of your U.S. sales, then we would tax 1% of that value-added base.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I have a very elementary question, but I really want to make sure I don't misinterpret this. Chris, can you explain to us the meaning of the column on the far right where it says mean income change per head of household or household?
So that is simply the change in, the easiest way to describe that is we have, so the baseline and the new equilibrium, that is a total amount of household income in that group. So focusing on that top line, it's $40 billion of income in the baseline. And then after the model gets back to equilibrium, mm-hmm. that goes down to 40 billion, goes from 40 billion 162 million to 40 billion 76 million. So that's a reduction of the 85.6. And then we see that we would expect a reduction in the number of households. Mm-hmm. And that's the migration. These models really hinge on, or they really focus on the migration between states with an open economy that's subnational. There's migration there. And so taken together, you have a reduction in the number of households and a reduction in the total disposable household income in that group. And that total, that new equilibrium divided by the number of households is just short by 100, it's now less by $123.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure I thoroughly understood that.
Senator Benz.
Thank you, Chair. Is the same $1 million floor the same starting point?
This one has a, I think it's a $500,000 floor.
And the amount of the $989 million that's used to buy down the rate, the PIT.
This is not shocking. This is very, very doable.
The revenue impact for the personal income tax cut?
Right.
That's the net.
That's the net.
Yeah, the 989 is the net.
Then the better question would be, how much was it before we backed out the PIT?
The PIT is around 275 million.
That's all I have.
Chris, you continue to put preliminary on this and these value-added runs. Can you tell me your confidence level in these models?
Well, we continue to that is put on there deliberately as we try to understand how we're actually to reflect the confidence level in the models. And I'm not fully confident that we're modeling the tax correctly in OTIM. OTIM wasn't really designed for this kind of tax. And one way I think about it is that, you know how we describe the tax base, that is the value-added tax in the U.S., that part isn't in OTIM. We don't have that information on outside of Oregon. So we're trying to model that as best we can, but we still get some results that don't necessarily make sense that we're trying to decipher. Like, for example, the change in the real disposable household income, the minus 246 million. The fact, if we had this compared to the CAT, just a CAT of the same magnitude, the CAT has a larger reduction there. And the interpretation there is that more of the VAT is being exported outside of Oregon. And I'm not sure that that's correct given the nature of this new take on a VAT where it's all apportioned down to Oregon via the single sales. So we would have expected those to be a little bit closer together.
Is that because the CAT tax modeling is, you have data from other states that have those taxes, and on this one you don't?
Well, on the, it's more of the starting point of what we have. We have better Oregon information.
Okay.
So, yeah. And with the starting point, a lot of this is non-Oregon information. So we're continuing to work at it to see if we can refine that.
Senator Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The value-added tax, is it correct to say that it's more equitable than the one we looked at previously, in the sense that it taxes you on the value as opposed to on something other than the value added? So I'm trying to figure out which one is the more equitable in application. And does this chart show us anything when it comes to that?
Well, the difference there between even the other one that we have here tonight, we get at this pyramiding or stacking question. And so the value-added tax is designed to prevent this pyramiding. So the tax base is only on the value created in that production process, whether you're providing services or physical goods, which again gets back to the questions around the financial sectors, financial and insurance. Those aren't the same kinds of explicit transactions, if you will. If somebody buys a computer or tablet or pens, or even purchases services. So that's the big difference between the two taxes, is that marginal piece.
Yeah, follow up. So I have this right. So if you had a grocery store and your margin was 2%, under this one, the value added would be the 2%. Is that correct, or do I have that?
Roughly speaking, yeah, because for a retail store, there generally isn't much value added. I mean, they're considered low margin businesses because they're buying the products. They don't do much to the products other than, and they buy them and then they put them on the shelf. And so the value there is convenience in going to one place to get all of those products. So there is some value, but it's very different from somebody who builds a chair or provides legal services or accounting services or medical services.
And so if we look at the previous example, can you share with us what would have been taxed under the previous example? Just to give us a kind of a comparative hypothetical of the grocery store and the chair.
Under a commercial activities tax, it's the amount that the product is sold for would be subject to the gross receipts tax or commercial activities tax.
And follow up, Mr. Chair, so to get back to it, the value-added tax would appear to be more equitable in that sense, in that it's not, there's not as much to stack. In fact, is there any, that would be correct. And then your margin would in some sense dictate the amount of tax you're paying under the value-added, as opposed to the number of dollars coming through the door under the previous approach.
Right, that's the difference between the two bases.
Okay. Thank you.
And also the rate is 4 times higher.
And there's that.
So when holding the dollar amount fixed, and that's where if we go back to some of the earlier charts where a gross receipts base is on the order of $300 billion, that's the tax base, and the value added is about $100 billion, you get that difference in rates.
Got it.
And then that can shift depending on the sector for the business with retail, wholesale, and manufacturing versus some of the service sectors.
Rep. Nathanson.
Thank you. Listening to your explanation of struggling with getting the appropriate numbers to do an OTIM analysis, that we have enough confidence in it to compare it with the other exercise. So I understand there's complexity and difficulty in preparing the OTIM, but it seems like the VAT is more difficult anyway to get the numbers right, because we have to start with a national some sort of information about the national activity. Can you explain to me at the highest level possible what confidence we have when we get numbers for a CAT to calculate a business's obligation under one tax form versus a VAT? It's still sounding to me like CAT is more straightforward and the VAT is more difficult. Or did I miss that?
Well, to try not to get into too much of the weeds, but as we're making these estimates, the starting point for Oregon sales, we are relying on tax return information, that is information that is provided on tax returns related to the income tax. We do need to make a number of adjustments to those numbers, and I'll leave it at that for right now, but we can't just take the amount of sales on an Oregon tax on Oregon corporation income tax return and take that basis. We do have to make some adjustments. But we have been working, and the Department of Revenue has been providing some really good information on from the tax returns for C corporations, S corporations, partnerships, and sole proprietors. So we have that information, and we can, if you will, from the ground up, build up the basis for commercial activities tax. And then what we've also been able to do is compare those numbers to other states. Now, building on the work that we did in 2017 with the Ohio commercial activities tax, we can take that tax and basically compare Oregon's economy to Ohio's economy and take their working version of a commercial activities tax. And give or take, Oregon is about 35% the size of Ohio. So we can take that approach and look at this tax that does exist and share it down to Oregon and then compare those results. And we've done that, and we get fairly consistent numbers. So that adds a greater degree of confidence in the numbers. So we are using Oregon data, but we're able to compare it to this, to another functioning version. With the value added tax, that's not the situation.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Senator Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I am wondering why the price levels only went up to 0.25%, even though we were taking more than $1 billion out. What is there any relationship there?
I think that gets at the notion of exporting the tax. Oh. If more of the tax is exported, prices are not going to increase as
right.
much in Oregon.
Okay.
And now we're back to that same question about expectations of the
right.
export.
Okay, so one of the criticisms of the commercial activity tax is this dynamic known as pyramiding, which is also present in sales taxes, and that's why business groups often tend to fight in sales tax states to eliminate business-to-business transactions, because there's pyramiding in sales taxes, and in commercial activities tax is a form of a consumption tax, so it does have that. And in fact, one of the arguments of a VAT is that it gets at this pyramiding issue. So we asked Chris if there was a way to marry these two structures in a way that tries to mitigate pyramiding, but also keeps it in a universe where we understand how it would work
since no other state does a VAT, and whether that's possible. And so he's going to explore that with us here.
So the third item that is in OLIS is referred to, is labeled the Modified Commercial Activities Tax. And just now starting to explore this, and what this table tries to show is we have a base rate of 0.32% to raise $1 billion annually. And if you recall some of the earlier graphs about reducing the size of the tax base from $300 billion down to $100 billion, this is kind of a step in that direction where a certain amount of business inputs or certain costs could be subtracted from the gross receipts. And the first block here are three different levels of subtractions for business inputs. And this would be, for example, I keep using the same example of a table manufacturer. I'm not sure why I'm stuck on that. But so if you have a table manufacturer and the wood that they buy is their business input for creating the table, then under this idea, they would be able to subtract some amount of the costs of that wood. And the three levels that I put up there are 10%, 15%, and 20%. And so as that occurs, we are shrinking the tax base. So again, holding a dollar target fixed in this page here, $1 billion, then that requires the tax rate to increase. And so in these cases, a 10% subtraction would lead to a 0.02% increase in the rate, going from 0.32% to 0.34%. And then you can see as the subtraction increases to 15% and 20%, that new tax rate inches up. It looks linear. I don't know that it's exactly linear because of the examples that they're pretty close together here. So another potential policy, and it can be married in a couple of different ways, would be a subtraction for labor costs. And that can be 10%, 15%, or 20%, or any number. These are just examples to show what the effect of that policy is. And here, the tax rate would increase to 0.33, 34, or 35. And again, the point here is just to show that dynamic of reducing that tax rate, reducing the tax base to get at some of the pyramiding issues and so forth, results in a higher tax rate. And the closest, this is somewhat similar to the Texas margin tax. If you think back to the very first day, we had about six states, and Texas has, I think it's four different options for choosing taxes, but one of them is they can subtract some inputs or they can subtract labor. And depending on the nature of the business, one choice or the other would be more beneficial, depending on where are the majority of their costs incurred. Are they labor costs or are they input costs? And so this is the intent here. The approach is to really explore if there's some kind of middle ground between the VAT that's been discussed and a straight up commercial activities tax. And so that's why the modified is there, is just to see if there's a middle ground that could be reached.
And these 10, 15, 20% are just, they could be 40, 32, whatever. Okay. But that shows you that when you do this, there's an expense and there's a cost. So business inputs will put pressure on a higher rate.
Right.
Yeah.
So that really, and depending on the nature of the business, a given business could be indifferent between the two taxes, depending on their individual circumstance. But it's really the dynamic at play in terms of the amount of stuff, if you will, that'll be taxed and the rate that's needed to achieve a target dollar amount.
So if we, for example, had that first example of the CAD at 0.29, and say we wanted to put in the 20% subtraction for business inputs, that 0.29 would have to be adjusted.
0.31 probably.
0.31.
That would be, off the cuff.
Yeah, and then if you said you wanted to do the same for labor, you'd go to
at a 10% level, maybe just 0.3.
So that gets you up to 0.35. And to what extent do you think that those two would mitigate pyramiding?
Well, I think every part of it helps. Mm-hmm. And it's just that trade-off. between the inputs. Now, the straight pyramiding would probably be more applicable to the business inputs, if you will, but depending on the nature of the business, they may not have a lot of business inputs. So that's where the policy call could be. It would be a choice for the business. You can subtract 15% of your inputs or 15% of your labor costs, something along those lines.
Interesting ideas. Rep. Smith Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chris, because that's actually part of what, so one of the things I've been wondering about this is, you know, when we talk about what our goals are for tech, you know, we always, we want to do things that don't discourage businesses from locating here, for example. And so what I keep wondering about, the idea of this, is would making labor be the thing that you subtract incentivize businesses to create more jobs here? Because if labor is because if their labor costs are what they can subtract, that would theoretically be an incentive to have more jobs here, or not a disincentive. But perhaps, yeah, your opinion on that, please.
I think in terms of what's going to drive aggregate demand is always a big driver for businesses' products or services. And to the extent you create an incentive or mitigate a disincentive, depending on the language, between the business inputs and the labor cost, you can cause a shift between the two to some extent. But by allowing a subtraction for labor cost, it does address that issue of not creating a disincentive.
Okay.
Which may not be the same thing as creating an incentive.
True, but it's not a disincentive either.
Rep. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm trying to get my arms around a basic question, and I guess this is for the whole committee. Is the conversation before us whether to add a CAT or a VAT to the income tax, or is the conversation before us to replace the income tax with a CAT or a VAT?
The estimates that I'm currently working on are just a new tax.
In addition
to the current structure.
And so I guess the question I'd have, Mr. Co-Chair, is at some point in time, I'm trying to get my arms around the whole picture of the impact this would have on Oregonians and on business. And so I'm trying to determine, are we looking to bring forward a proposal that would eliminate the income tax, the corporate income tax, replace it with the new method of taxation? Or do we feel that we're trying to add an additional revenue stream to our existing?
My understanding at the moment is an additional revenue stream that would be dedicated to education.
Okay, thank you.
Rep. Smith Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have thought about this a lot too, and an interesting way to think about it is that if we were to create, this new tax and then get rid of the corporate income tax, everyone would be paying more, but corporations would be getting they would be the only ones who would be paying less. Hmm. And that does not sound like what we are trying to do.
And that is something to build on that. That's not in the information tonight, but the different business structures. We have C corporations, mm-hmm, who pay the corporation excise income tax. And then all of the other businesses, the pass-through entities, S corporations, partnerships, and then you have sole proprietors pay through the personal income tax. Mm-hmm. And so one of the consequences of taking a tax, creating a new tax, whichever one it would be, and if you eliminated the corporate excise tax, then for corporations, for C corporations, there's a put and a take there. You know, the good news is they don't have to pay the corporate excise tax. The bad news is they'd have to pay this tax. But if under a policy where there's a revenue target, then you are effectively having all of the new tax. I'm making some math assumptions here. All of the new tax would be imposed on the pass-through entities and sole proprietors.
Thank you.
Sorry, Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Chris, I was looking at this and trying to figure out, trying to remember if you had given us the nature of Oregon when it comes to what we do here, how much manufacturing, which I think is 22%, and how much is retail and how much is thus and so. And then we would compare this type of tax to those, the nature of the activities we have most of in this state. And so that's not to suggest we're static, but it would be interesting. And then that would get us then back to what's the fairest thing to do, what's the most equitable thing in trying to, isn't that what we're doing? Is this trying to be as fair as we possibly can in opposing a tax?
And to that point, there are a couple of charts from several meetings ago about, I broke down gross state product across the sectors, and yeah, each sector's share of business inputs versus labor costs. I used cost of goods sold at the time, I think, right, just to convey that. And you could see the difference in the sectors with manufacturing, retail, wholesale, a lot of business inputs being purchased, and then the service sector. So those are fundamentally different in their structure of their businesses. And that's why there are these two categories here of subtracting business inputs or subtracting labor costs to try and get that notion of equity or fairness. Because if you go with, there are the real consequences, if you go with one tax, how are the different sectors affected? And then within the different sectors, and it's more a sector piece than a structure of a business. A C corporation or an S corporation, it's really, are they a manufacturer or a retailer? There's been a little bit of confusion that a given tax might affect a type of business a little bit differently. But if we're talking about a new tax, then it's really the sector, the nature of the business, as opposed to the legal form, if you will.
Senator Burdick.
Thank you. Is there any way that you can extrapolate these estimates or scenarios and figure out where on the Ernst & Young rating category we would move up? Right now, I think we're at 48 in terms of business tax burden, and see how far up the rating we would get if we adopted these scenarios?
Yes, I can put that together, and that would be independent of the structure of the tax, or at least if I'm understanding your question correctly, it would be.
I'm talking about total tax burden.
So yeah, if we take that ranking and we add $1 billion, that moves us from seventh lowest to where? Yeah,
exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to know that information.
And Chris, if we do this hybrid model, we're basing it on the commercial activity tax model, and therefore, you can, there is a pathway to deal with insurance and financial institutions.
The way, at least for the time being, under the corporate income tax, they do calculate an Oregon sales figure. And so if that, right now my thinking is that if that is the path that the committee chooses to decide, we would just point to that definition of Oregon sales. And then, potential, I'm not sure, yeah, but that's what we would do.
Okay. And when you were putting this chart together, I know that the rates are just sort of, and could be anything, placeholder rates, but was it your way of thinking that you would do business inputs or labor costs or choose the lowest or the most advantageous? I mean, how would you see that working mechanically?
It is a complete policy choice. I think where I would go down is that it would be an either or for a business to get at the nature of the different businesses.
Okay.
So if you have a lot of labor costs, you can have a subtraction for labor costs. If most of your costs are inputs, then you'd be better off with that one.
All right. And so if we asked you to model a version of this with some random rates and some different rates, what would your confidence level wasn't the highest on the VAT, but if we did this style, would you have confidence? Your confidence level on the VAT, would you said was preliminary because you don't have, because there's just so many unknowns, but with this, would you have the certainty to do a good model forecast?
I think so. We've started looking into the data for these. And I think we can get those models for you.
Okay.
So we'll continue to look at what these numbers are as we plug them in. And again, the versions that we came out with tonight are just academic, not proposals or recommendations. Rep. Smith.
Yeah, thank you again, Mr. Co-Chair. And I really appreciate this work. And Chris, you've done an A-plus job explaining it to us. So thank you for that. One of the questions I have, Mr. Co-Chair, I want to go back to my question I just asked a moment ago. Have we talked or discussed with business and industry if, and let's push pause and let me start over. Understanding the revenue need we have before the state and the committee's work that's going on, have we talked to the business community to see if the CAT or the VAT would be a better replacement for the income tax? Understanding we'd have to adjust, have we had that conversation?
We have.
I think we had them here and put that question to them, and they put it back on us. And it's a very legitimate conversation to have. If the goal is to add $1 billion a year to this dedicated fund,
right,
then if you replace the corporate income tax with any of these models, then the rates would be much, much higher.
Sure.
Because
but their income.
The current corporate income tax brings in about $700 million a year. So you would have to raise these models, whatever they end up being, by $700
million. In following up on that, thoroughly understand that. Where I'm trying to get is I wonder what the opportunity cost would be to business of replacing one method of taxation, the income tax, with a new method. I wonder if that is more appealing to business and industry, but could still get us the revenue goals that we need.
Yep.
I just throw that out there as a conversation. I'd love to have people come visit me on that. Thank you.
There are a lot of nuances in that conversation.
You bet.
One of them is that only C-Corps pay the current corporate income tax.
Correct.
You eliminate that, and now those C-Corps aren't paying anything.
Mm-hmm.
Until we replace it with whatever else this is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we'll come back soon and look at some new models, hopefully, and pursue this hybrid approach and continue plowing forward. Thank you all, committee. Appreciate it. We are adjourned.